Good morning, everybody. It is June 23rd, 2020. You think I'm going to text that? It's so hard. You could hear the hesitation in my voice. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Again, on June 23rd, 2020, big day for us. Our AC&E issue, the newest issue of our magazine, all about equity and access, our online journal. The new issue, the June-July, is on site today over at ace-ed.org. It'll be up there for the next 8 weeks or so. It's always up there in the past shows, but it's going to be the center of the website right now. All right, and we're very proud of this issue. It looks just great, and great articles, et cetera, over at ace-ed.org. If you're interested in accessibility and equity, we suggest you go over to that one site in all of education that's devoted entirely to equity and access at ace-ed.org. And our magazine, AC&E, is up there. You can just click right on it and go through it, et cetera. We've got some great articles. Please join our consortium. We want your voice in there as well. ace-ed.org, okay? That ace-ed stands for the American Consortium for Equity in Education. This show today, we're going to have a continuation of a show we started on June 10th with my good friends Jay Littman and Jill Akers Clayton, and it's from Fielding International. Therefore, it's not from Fielding International. It's from they're from Fielding International, the great school design firm. Jill is their senior learning designer. She's the kind of the, quote, the education side of what they do as they design schools and classes, et cetera, where Jay is the architecture side of it, okay, the pure design side of it, etc. I'll let him tell you all about Fielding International. We'll archive the show at education-talkradio.org, education-talkradio.org. We tweet over to EduTalk Radio. Facebook is EduTalk Radio and Larry Jacobs, and LinkedIn is at Larry Jacobs. We have shows going back to 2011 over at education-talkradio.org. Please check it all out. We put a new schedule up on the website on Saturdays. And now, without further ado, if I can find my mouse, there it is. Okay, let me get them on right now. We got Jill and we got Jay. You'd think I would have clicked through before that. I would have learned that by now, but that's impossible. Ladies first, okay? Beauty before age. Beauty before age this time, and I say that without hesitation. Hello, Jill.
Good morning, Larry. It's great to talk with you again.
It's a pleasure. It's a little easier on my ears with some background noise in there. Jill, I heard from your second cousin, Elizabeth Garzarelli. Do you know Elizabeth?
I sure do. I love that you have heard from Elizabeth.
Yes. So she was listening to the show, and I'll send her this one today, okay? Or you can.
All
right.
That's
hope she's
wonderful.
Listening
Thank
today.
You.
Yeah. She wrote me after the show. You guys related? You're actually second cousins?
Well, she's second cousins with my husband, so we're related by marriage.
Related by marriage. Okay, good enough. Thank you. That's very good. That's the same way I'm related to my wife, oddly enough. We must have something in common there.
Yes, I know.
There you go.
Love it.
Okay. Related by marriage. There you go. Okay, hello, Elizabeth. Okay, and Jim will be right back to you as soon as I introduce the one and only Jay Littman. Hello, Jay.
How you doing, Larry?
I'm good, buddy. A partner in Fielding International. He is you're an architect, you're a school designer, and you think about it from an education point of view. Am I right?
We like to change the world through education. We want to make learning spaces to help students thrive, and every way you can imagine thrive is defined. Healthy, happy,
yeah.
Intelligent, engaging, and ready for the 21st century.
And
so
a lot of that has
of
to do with we have learned. Yeah, it has to do with the learning environment. That's what you're learning environmental experts.
Yep.
Oh, I like that.
And we have perspective that a lot of firms don't have because our practice is worldwide. We've worked in 52
mm-hmm.
countries all across the
mm-hmm.
U.S., and we have 4 studios in the U.S., and we have a new studio by at least 1 or 2 years at least in Singapore. So we're really spreading out and making bigger and bigger change for more than 15 years now.
It's important. And, you know, what's interesting is we have learned, and we'll get into this in detail today, from the coronavirus, the pandemic, And it's interesting, we could always say that because you were in so many different countries and work with so many different countries, you're bringing that expertise. With, you know, we always look to Singapore as an example. You just mentioned them, Norway, Finland, all that sort of stuff. All right. But they're also ahead of us, if I may, and I'm not sure they are, but I would bet dollars to donuts a couple of them are. Okay, in terms of the pandemic and a return to school to their kids and all that. So you bring, and this is important in this day and age, as Tom Friedman said, the world is flat these days once again. Okay, and we got to learn from everybody else. So we're all connected. That's my point, I guess. We're all connected, right, Jay?
You
learn from afar. Good.
Yeah, that's actually true. And funny enough, tomorrow, Jill and I are going to be part of a panel discussion that organized by your friend Adrian Dayton over at EdSpaces, Ed Market.
Yeah, good. Talk about that. I always push what Jim's doing
there. Yep, we're going to have a worldwide panel discussion with heads of schools over at Liaison American School, the International School of Kazan. You remember the German school, Jill?
Yeah. I can't say it, unfortunately. I'm not very good at it. I'll look it up.
It is.
I don't want to botch it.
No. It's principal of. So it's the gymnasium at Weikersheim, Germany.
And VS Furniture and Ed Markets. Yep.
Yep. So. And what we're doing is, as you just said, Larry, we're looking at these schools. Obviously, they've been ahead of us because they got the coronavirus first, but also they're international schools. They're not constrained by a lot of governmental regulations that control public schools in the U.S. And so they're taking a much more open view, and they're going to be sharing with us their approach to how they're reopening schools. And of course, Germany's been very successful. Kazan, which is part of Tatarstan, so it's part of the Russian Federation, but it's really its own republic, and they attacked it much earlier than the actual country of Russia did. So they're already bringing teachers in for the fall, and working with them, training them early in terms of the issues. And of course, you know, the Liaison American School is one of the premier international schools of the world, and actually where a lot of teachers learn how to manage international schools. They have their own degrees that they confer with Endicott College every summer. And
cool.
So Christopher Ott's going to be speaking about what they're doing in Switzerland. And of course, Switzerland has the least amount of cases, and they've been the most successful. But they're all working as one country. Every one of these places.
They're always
Germany,
neutral. They're
Russia.
Always neutral. Somehow they remain neutral.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, but I think the difference is that European countries have each acted as a country, and the United States has really been acting like a confederacy because of general lack of government oversight and guidance and leadership. So Rhode Island is doing great because we're small, we have a good governor, and we've been working very diligently, you know, as a population. So we're probably ahead of a lot of states in the whole New England region, certainly way ahead of everybody in the rest of the United States. And Jill can speak about Texas on her own.
Jill?
I can certainly speak about Texas, yes. Texas in the sense that we're working really hard to figure out the ways to return and keep collaborative spaces in our schools to figure out how to go ultra hygienic, provide more food options. Texas is trying to figure out how to improve air quality and filtration, antimicrobial surfaces. They're trying to figure out how
to talk about this,
school operations going 24/7 and, but we're challenged in trying to make decisions to figure out how we're going to open.
Yeah,
it's hard. I do want to concentrate on that infrastructure type stuff today. I just want to say one thing to go back to what Jay said a few minutes ago. If you go over my good friends, our good friends over at the Education Market Association, it's at edmarket.org. That's run by a great guy named Jim McGarry. edmarket.org. By the way, they write for us in most of our issues of our magazine. And tomorrow at noon, all you have to do is go over to edmarket.org, scroll down a little bit, it'll say upcoming webinars about reopening schools, lessons learned from an international perspective. Tomorrow at noon Eastern, okay, at edmarket.org. You can click through over that, okay? I didn't mean to interrupt. Well, actually, I did mean to interrupt, but go ahead, Jay.
No, that's good because you're letting people know because this is being directed towards school directors in the United States so that hopefully, you know, and superintendents, principals, so they can at least start to
and
see
facilities
what people
directors.
Are doing.
Yeah.
Right.
We need perspective.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we're learning lessons on creating environments around social distancing from folks who have already been there. So states like Texas and Rhode Island can take away really important lessons on what's working and what's not working. And so we have the opportunity to share that so our states can make more informed decisions, so we can get kids back in environments where they're collaborating, they have resources, they have support. When we're talking about equity and social justice, and you know, for some kids that means just having a healthy pre-prepared meal that helps reduce the risk of transmission as they're trying to get it. And so we have some really great lessons that these schools worldwide are sharing with us tomorrow.
Yeah, it also means, if I may, Jill, it's not just to have a good square meal, which is so darn important. I don't mean to do that. But it also means having a healthy school. All right.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
We can distance as best we can in a school. It's going to be difficult. And we talked about this on our June 10th show. Okay, you know, kids are kind of jostling in the hallways all the time. I mean, they're kids. Okay, that's the essence of a middle school hallway, is to push people out of the way, let's be honest, okay? And, you know, get together and all that sort of stuff and hang out at your locker, et cetera. All right, that's something. But that's something that maybe the kids can understand and help manage. All right. I'm not sure they can, but let's hope they can. But there's another deeper problem. And that's why I wanted you guys to come on here today and come back again. You know, you're welcome here anytime. And that is about making a school healthy. And it goes beyond, okay, keeping the kids 6 feet apart. Okay. And Jill just kind of touched on it. I want both of you to talk about it. It has to do with air filtration, it has to do with ventilation. All right. You know, we all do it. A lot of the schools have the 3D printers and they give out fumes like you can't believe. Okay. We don't need that on top of anything else. I mean, there's all kinds of things that make a school healthy. All right. Now we've got a real challenge here. And I'll go to Jill. You can swing it over to Jeff. Jill, as I say those things, and you were just kind of talking about it, making a school healthy, what can we do? Where are we on this? Because we have to, and I don't know how we're going to do it with old schools like where I went. The schools that Jay and I went to in Philadelphia, okay, Overbrook and Northeast, respectively, they're old schools. My school is about 12 million years old, okay? The British took it over as a headquarters in 1775, all right? And Jay's was one, Northeast was one of the newer schools. What's that now, 137 years old? So, you know, where are we on this, right? No offense to Northeast, Jay, of course. Okay, but Jill, just talk about that. You're welcome. Thank you. About that.
And I think every day we're all discovering new and better ways to design safer and healthier learning environments in these antiquated buildings, in our new buildings, and encouraging a new era of what that means as part of the school's DNA is this healthy environment for all the occupants. And that looks like an operations that goes 24/7. I mean, we can't say that schools open at 6 a.m. and close at 4 p.m. anymore, because we have to ensure that strategies around mitigation for the COVID virus and during this pandemic have to be elevated. So that's going to include things like staggering schedules, how we clean surfaces, the materials that we use, budgeting, the ways in which we are allowing entry and exit into buildings. I'll let Jay speak to the air ventilation because he's really an expert in that area.
Yeah.
But we're looking at it from a human capital perspective And how do we ensure there are humidity controls? There's increased outdoor air exchange. So how do we get kids inside to get fresh air? How do we start to open the windows in these old buildings where none of their windows work? Where Jay and I work in some of the schools in Cranston, you can't even see
Rhode
out
Island.
The windows,
yeah.
Much less open them.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So,
is that true? Really? They're that dirty? Are you talking about years of dirt on them? You can't see outside?
Years of dirt, and they're like plexiglass replacement windows that are stronger
right.
and don't allow a view in or out, where kids don't feel safe because they don't have a sight line. But now it's really about increased outdoor air exchange and then thinking about improved filtration. And I don't think that schools, especially schools that were built during that British era that you were referring to, Larry, of our schools need improved, increased outdoor air exchange. But we've designed schools with fewer windows. We've designed them with windows that don't open, and we've locked them into this cells and bells model. So as we're trying to figure out how to create healthier schools, we're starting to realize, or what we've already realized, and hopefully many others are realizing, that our learning environments aren't really healthy spaces anyway if we don't have a view outside. If we're so worried about keeping kids focused on just a teacher and a book, that healthy learning environments are more than that physical space, but we have to be able to work both at the same time in this post-COVID era. So, Jay,
I'm going to correct you. I'm going to correct you. It's not a post-COVID era. It's a COVID era. Okay?
Well, yeah, that's true.
We're in it
we're
hot
not
and
post.
Heavy.
You're
yeah.
right in the
yes,
middle
we're
of
not
it.
Post
knowing
at all.
In Texas, yeah. Knowing in Texas the virus is increasing at a rapid rate.
Yeah.
My husband's company has just been infiltrated with the virus for the first time.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That's terrible. I'm sorry to hear that. I hope everybody's okay. Okay, that's scary stuff.
Yeah, it is. So, Jay, you want to talk about kind of some of the other building systems that support improved air quality as we think about healthy environments?
Yeah, I was thinking of the hundreds of things that we've learned since our first our last radio broadcast with you, Larry, because we've been doing lots of research. And actually,
our firm is a research firm,
and Jill is actually heading up with us this sort of development of a reopening strategy, because we were asked by one of our school clients a couple of weeks ago, and we're designing additions that are more of the sort of Fielding International style of learning in community, so we don't have cells and bells. And of course, the parents now are all getting heightened and afraid of anything that's new because we're in this crisis. And so what's happening is that on May 19th, the CDC put out this document called Considerations for Schools. And it's generally a pretty good document in terms of the science how COVID is transmitted. It's by respiratory droplets in an aerosol form coming out of your mouth, in your nose, and that's you have to inhale in order to contract it. Okay, and they go through promoting behaviors that will reduce spread. That's a smart thing. They get into healthy environments, and this is where we start to hit a rock, and this is what is going to pull back education if it's taken by the letter and the word 140 years. Because as I go to page 3, they have this bullet called modified layouts, spaces and seating of desks 6 feet apart, turn desks to face in the same direction so the teacher can see everybody, put barriers up between each student so that, you know, basically it's like chickens in a coop. And the reality is that's not a healthy environment because, as Jill said, it's more than, you know, the transmission of the disease. It's about, you know, psychological health, social well-being, and whoever wrote this little piece in this big document, which is good otherwise, they don't know what's going on in classrooms. No teacher teaches like this anymore. You know, these guys never heard of blended learning. They don't know about learning in teams. They don't know any of this stuff. They're saying close down all communal spaces, shut down playgrounds, we'll wipe down playground equipment. Nobody does that.
Yeah.
You know, and of course, all these furniture companies are now saying, look, we have a plastic barrier. And they're taking stuff that they use for all kinds of other reasons, saying now they're for schools. And it's completely wrong. And we've been dealing with a doctor over at Boston University, their public health service, Dr. Christopher Gill, who's been kind of helping us along. And he's published a paper with his colleagues, and it's about assessing risk. And so I'm saying this because what I say after that has to be based on something. And, you know, what they said was that that the problem is that we're paralyzed right now by the extremes of COVID. And their job in this paper was to triage the risk and create a risk index, which is pretty cool. And what they've done is they've looked at the facts. And the statistics. And he said one out of 100,000 children will have an adverse reaction to this. The press focuses on one child or two children, and immediately people go, every child that gets this is going to have this. And in fact, most children that get COVID, it's more like a cold. It's really adults
that's right.
Hit by this in a major way.
Yeah.
So what he's basically saying is we need to look at it. He says children outside of the playground are actually low manageable risk. It says obviously if you put them in school with no protections, that's a high risk. But if you put them in school and you try to break down the patterns of transmission, and of course then you take temperatures, you ask questions of kids as they come in, you make parents smart about when their kids can and can't come to school, you can wind up with this risk index. And it goes from everyone at home is healthy, the kid doesn't have anything, he goes to school. If the child is vulnerable because of some medical condition, of course, they wouldn't go to school. If the child is not vulnerable but has a grandparent at home or a parent at home that's vulnerable, then maybe there's a mix. So what you wind up with is multiple groups. Some are in school, some are at home. If the teachers are in their 30s and they don't have any problems, they go to school. If the teachers in their late, you know, they're 65. And they have a pre-existing mental condition, maybe they're the ones that go home and teach virtually to the students in the school. So there's a whole rethink that has to happen. So once that's done, the next piece, and we're working on this in our office right now, as I said, Jill's helping head this effort off, is, and as you know, Excel's and Bell's model with everybody lined up in a box, according to this doctor, and one kid in that room has COVID, he slips through and he sneezes, all those kids are exposed. Doesn't matter if they have plastic borders around them. It doesn't matter, you know, if they're 6 feet apart, you're in a box that's contained. The air is going to circulate. You're going to get it.
Right. Exactly.
And so we said, if you're in a learning commons, you know, the big communal spaces that we have between the smaller scale classrooms, and you're in small group rooms, you're over in a campfire space, another group of students is over in a booth. Another group of students is over, you know, in sort of like an enclosed library zone. Those students, if they work in work groups, which is what PBL helps promote, it's what, you know, we've done at the Eden Park School, which we've mentioned before in Cranston, Rhode Island. Those students have a lower chance of mass transmission. And so what we're trying to advocate for is don't go back to the Sells and Bells model. The teachers that have blended learning, where they have some students are in a tent, some students, you know, like within the room, some students are over in another zone, other students are like in little cubby spaces. Those students are safer because if one student gets sick in the group of five and the teacher notices and pulls that student out, those students might be at risk that were with that student, but not all 28 kids in the room. So that's the first part of how we reopen schools
Small groups. I like that. Small groups. But you know, I got to ask you something. This is something that struck me when you said it. They're talking about the CDC rule. They're talking about a plastic shield in front of the kid, all kids facing front. Okay. But I'm thinking, you know, frankly, when I was in school, I didn't face front. Supposedly I was facing front, but I was talking surreptitiously to the kid next to me. You know, you're engaged with your other, you're walking from class to class together. Okay, you're not in a plastic bubble shuffling along, okay, like
no.
Poor healthcare workers in their oxygenated hazmat suits, okay? What the hell's the difference? Is it going to be the teacher that circulates rather than the kids? And the kids are just going to sit there all day? Is that what somebody's thinking of?
I mean, yeah, that's a non-starter. Well,
my 12-year-old as you're saying those words, their jaws are dropping.
Yeah, because the CDC, God bless everything else they've done, whoever wrote that section has no idea what's going on inside of a school, none. And what we're looking at is we know what's going inside of a school, in every kind of school, whether it's religious or public or international, and we've known what they're doing in India and Australia and England and Germany and the United States and Canada, even up in the Arctic. So we know what's going on. And humans learn the same way, and they have the same social, you know, connections and apparatus. They're all going to be the same. They all have shared experiences. So whoever's writing this, just they didn't hire an educator that can say that's not going to work. So we're looking at
why you guys have Jill on staff. Jill's an educator. Okay,
yeah,
a lot of you guys are architects and designers. That's why Jill's there. She's an educator. She's a big believer in PBL, Project Learning, by the way.
That's what makes us different from everybody else.
Everybody. But let me ask you this, okay? All that considered, okay? And Jay, we talked about this, touched on this. The bathrooms, if I may, the water fountains, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, most school water fountains, if I'm thinking maybe back in the old days, they may have shut these off. They were little bubblers, and you literally had to kiss the actual bubbling machine and suck to get any water out of it. The pressure was usually so low, okay? And the water, by the way, was horrible, okay? But that's Philadelphia
water.
We'll go from there. You know, they wring out catfish before the water goes through the filter, okay? But I'm curious, okay? What are they going to do about bathrooms in schools? I mean, you know, I worry about that even with restaurants because you know it's fine. All the restaurants here in our town, which is a lot of restaurants, they all have tents up, okay, and everybody's eating outside. It's beautiful, you know, and sitting at tents, all right. But you still have to go in and use the bathroom, all right. Where are we going that with kids? Where I said this on the last show we did on June 10th. But in Boston, I'll use Boston as an example. You know, there's four bathrooms and three of them, four toilets and three of them don't work. Okay, two out of the five sinks don't work. Okay, and that's before the COVID crisis. So, you know, these schools are old with big urban areas. Detroit, go right down the list, anywhere you want. Okay, the schools are old. Okay, they're not in great shape to begin with. How can we possibly bring kids during a healthcare crisis back and expect them to go home? Jay, I'll let you answer that. My job is to pose the questions.
Well, there's a lot to unpack there. I think start with the water fountains. All the water fountains that we put in now have bottle fillers. And most kids are told by their parents, don't drink from the fountain. Every kid that we know in most of the schools we work in the United States come with bottles. You know, the little, you know, the water bottle, like the drinking bottle. So
use a
bottle filler. So no lips touch the bottle filler, it goes in. So that's one way to solve it. You know, obviously, you know, fountains that aren't working need to be replaced. Will they get replaced in time for schools?
No.
It's hard to know because schools, the municipalities and cities aren't providing, and the states aren't providing the extra money. I know in New York State, they're bringing out a bunch of real draconian measures of what they want to have what the superintendents need to do, not providing them with any money to do it. So, but that's another issue. So let's talk. So the water fountains you can solve, right? The bathrooms are tougher because the bathrooms, again, we've solved those problems, but that doesn't solve the problem for the 99% of schools that don't have it. So the solution is to go to single use bathrooms. It solves access problems. It solves accountability problems because a child is less apt to vandalize a bathroom when the teacher knows who is in and out of a specific room, or they can certainly track it backwards. So they tend to have less problems with it. They're easier to clean because you have a finite thing you're cleaning, and you can keep it in better shape. And, you know, when you get into the upper grades, they can then act as general gender-neutral spaces. But the existing bathrooms means they're going to have extra, you know, janitorial help keeping these places clean. I mean, the rooms that the bathrooms that are not in shape is nothing we can deal with. The school district has got to like fix stuff that's broken. But eventually,
yeah, without
when
money.
This does pass, yeah, well, yeah, and I'll tell you, when this does pass, and it will pass, we will have a vaccine. You know, as Dr. Gill has said, you know, because I had COVID apparently. But I got early exposure to it in Russia.
Please.
And the doctors said that your T cells were activated. And then when my wife and I both got it, like 2 months later in New York City, at the very beginning, before anyone even knew what the symptoms were, you know, we had the classic symptoms. And in May, we were tested. Finally, they have a reliable test through Brown University's medical school. And our doctor's affiliated, so we got that test. And I had, you know, an antibody count for COVID. And they said, well, then you must have had it.
Wow.
But then it says, why do I still have a higher count 3 months later? My wife doesn't. And he asked me that question. Where were you before that? And I said, Russia, Moscow, in December. And they said, well, you must have been exposed. So the reason I'm saying all this is because when I said this to Dr. Gill, he says, well, that's my point. I said, so wait, you're saying if I have a low exposure to it, incidental exposure, it can actually activate my T cells? He goes, yes, that's how vaccines work. That's why we're going to have a vaccine, because it's a scary virus. It's different than we've known before, but it's a coronavirus. We know all about coronaviruses.
Wow.
and we know how your systems work. That's why there's multiple places around the world working on a vaccine. We will have a vaccine. The question is, will we have it in November, December, or January? But
hold
we
on,
absolutely
Jim.
Will have a vaccine. You know,
yeah.
So,
yeah, and by the way, everybody, just so you know this, I ran into this at the very beginning of this. I want to get back to Jill in a second. There are lots of coronaviruses out there. Okay, coronavirus itself, in and of itself, is not new. I think everybody knows this, but I just want to make sure. Okay, but COVID-19 is the pandemic one. Okay, if you look in a can of Lysol, it says kills most coronaviruses. Okay, they're around.
Right.
All right, they have to do with those little crowns that stick out from the bacteria, but they're around. Period. But COVID-19 is the one we're talking about. Okay, so scary stuff. I didn't know that, Jay. That's really amazing. Jill, you've been trying to sneak in there. Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to go back to your question around bathrooms and water fountains. One thing that we've seen based on our research is that these areas are going ultra hygienic. So that key consideration is really eliminating the need to touch surfaces wherever possible. So we see schools with gang bathrooms eliminating entrance doors. They're currently replacing things with touchless fixtures. Again, antimicrobial surfaces. If we're thinking about social distancing in the bathroom, we're also thinking about greater spacing of hand washing stations, so washing your hands before you enter the bathroom, and then another hand washing station after you exit the bathroom, as well as placing hand washing stations along major circulation pathways throughout the building. So if you have a water fountain or a bubbler, that you're placing hand washing stations near those water fountains. And so really thinking about monitoring these spaces and placing and dispersing those resources around your building so they don't only exist within one space. And that's one thing that schools are looking at right now, because they can't make and they don't have the budget for huge physical and structural changes. These are things that schools can do right now as they think about opening in the fall. How can they provide multiple resources to distribute circulation as students and adults move around these spaces? Another thing that they're looking at are adult hand washing stations and student hand washing stations to help keep the adults safe, because we know that their risk is higher based
on
the impact of COVID-19. And I just wanted to add some of those key things in there that you could do if you can't make big structural changes in an old building.
Yeah, it's really scary, and I hope they can. But let me take that one step further, Jill, if I may. All right? And I know this has to happen. This is the thing that worries me. And I'm going to pick any big city. I'm going to use, just as an example, Detroit. All right? Detroit schools are and again, as an, I'll pick Philadelphia, my hometown. There you go. I'll keep this simpler. Okay? The district is in serious monetary problems. Okay,
yep.
It's good, you know, they got a great superintendent, I know, Bill, but it's really in tough shape. All right, and what worries me, all those things you said, I can see them happening in schools where there's a little better of a tax base. All right, but I have trouble picturing those things happening, and I hope I'm dead wrong. I'd just like to know what you're hearing about the big urban school districts. Okay, and every school within, that's a lot of them are falling apart anyway. What are you hearing from big urban districts? And that's an equity problem, okay?
Absolutely.
That's an equity problem. So, or I should say that, I should say challenge, okay? So what are you hearing from the big urban districts, Jill, if anything?
Absolutely. You know, they're trying to, at this point, they're still trying to fix broken bathrooms that don't work just based on pre-COVID experiences. But what I'm hearing out of the big districts is that that what they're doing is trying to create an extended janitorial staff that's working 24/7.
Mm.
So posting
okay.
people in and outside and around those bathroom areas.
Wow.
So that way students are hand washing before and after they're eating, before and after they're going to the bathroom. So increasing the level of non-certified staff to help inner city areas like Metro Detroit, in Dallas, I'm sure in Philly, in New York City, to help those areas increase the amount of hand washing, coronavirus deterrent, you know, really creating those touchless surfaces only in a way that they can in an affordable fashion. That's what I've heard at this point so far. And so I think that really gives us another sort of global coronavirus research areas. How are we keeping restrooms and eating areas safe in those larger schools? And how are those bigger districts really shining a light on the deep digital divide that they have between schools that have different tax bases? And how are we doing that at a state level? We haven't done that. I myself haven't gone that deep, and I think that's an area for us to explore.
It is, and I didn't mean to, I hope I didn't put you on the spot by asking that, because you don't speak up for every state. But yeah,
right. No, absolutely.
But
you should always put me on the spot.
You're on the spot, okay? You're Johnny on the spot, okay? So you're Jill on the spot. I like that. Let's go to Jay on the spot. Jay, you got 5 minutes. Go. We're not even have five. You got 4 minutes. Go.
That's okay. I think the problem with all the big systems is the same problem with the little systems, except the bigger. And you know, again, little systems, 20 schools, 25 schools, like a typical like small city in a state, they can be more agile and move around and listen to other options and kind of work their way through this. The big systems like Philadelphia, Chicago, Boston, Washington, they're monolithic. They're plagued by the same problems the little systems are, which is there is no conceptual framework yet on how to reopen schools. A lot of people are using the CDC model, like we started saying, but the CDC has nothing to do with education. And
exactly.
No big education group is trying to do that. That is the one thing we are trying to do right now, and hopefully big city systems are bringing their brain trusts together. We're going to try to give them some kind of options, but it's hard because the other problem is that systems are each working on their own. And I'm going to just say again, there's no national consensus right now.
Yep.
And I think by the time they figure it out, Larry, it's going to be over.
Yeah.
You know, there'll be lots of stops.
But there'll be another one coming
like
down the pike, believe me. COVID-19 is going to be over, but believe me, another one's coming down the pike.
So we only have COVID-22 because it's named the year it happened. So when we have the COVID-22, hopefully we'll be in the middle of a national reconstruction of schools, because there's so many things wrong with how schools are, you know, funded. They're funded with the minimum amount of square footage allowed for reimbursement. So no school has the wiggle room to deal with this. You know, you only have what you have. You don't have those extra spaces where you can get creative, where you can be experimental. And also when you have a crisis, you have extra room to put students. No one has that, because we've spent generations building only what we need and only that much. And so schools need that extra space. No school is, you know, using the word capacious. No school is.
And you know,
really
what you're
hard.
Saying is so important, and we always do this, and we're not proactive in this. In many cases, we are reactive, okay? And in the end, that nails you, okay? And that's what we're talking about here. We all fell off this cliff together, and now the schools that at least thought it through and rebuilt in the last few years are going to be better. This is really an incredible story that we're going to be dealing with, because we're dealing with CDC, and CDC doesn't understand education. Good-hearted folks, don't misunderstand what I'm saying, but they're putting out guidelines for education from 1927, okay?
And exactly.
Yeah, and it just ain't going to work. You know, Charles Lindbergh will make it across the Atlantic. Somebody has to tell them that. Okay, I picked 1927, so that shows my vast knowledge of history.
Good as any.
Okay, so here's the joke, Jill, though some would say it's half vast. Say that, you'll get it. Okay. Thank you, Jill. Okay, all right, anyway, we got to go, guys. Thank you, Jill. I knew that would eventually catch. I knew that would get there at some point. So, all right, thank you, Jill, for laughing at a very old joke. I appreciate that. Okay, I do. I appreciate
Absolutely.
Both of you. Got to go. We're gonna do more as we get closer. We're gonna do another show in August, early August. Plan on it, you two. I know you're not going anywhere. There's a pandemic out there, so I know you'll be home. Yes, yes.
Well, I owe
Real
you
quick.
An article. You'll have that for your August
edition,
because that's what I'm working on now.
Okay,
there's a lot of research that we're catching up with. You know, so
thank you. Okay, this is great. Get it into us as soon as you get out. Have I put you in touch with Maya, who is our editor? Did I do that yet?
No. Okay. Nope. You did not.
That's my fault. Yell at me. I'll do that as soon as I get off the show here. Okay?
Okay. Good.
Right. You guys are terrific. Jill, take care of yourself. Okay? Tell Cousin Elizabeth I said hi. All right?
I will. Thanks, Larry. We always appreciate time.
Well, I love having you on. And Jay, thanks, buddy.
A pleasure.
Okay, I'll talk to you soon, I promise.
You got it.
Okay?
Okay.
Thank you both. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Jay Littman, okay, Jill Akers, both from Fielding International, F-I-E-L-D-A-I-N-G, FieldingINTL.com, Fielding International. It's school design with learning at the center of it. Okay, so check it out. They're great stuff. I love having them on. We'll do another one as we get into August, because all this will change and grow and multiply, et cetera. We're going to archive the show, education-talkradio.org, tweet it at EdTalkRadio. Jay just said he's going to do an article for us. That's our magazine, AC&E, Equity Access Pre-K-12. It's available to everybody. A brand new issue over at ace-ed.org. That's the American Consortium for Equity in Education, ace-ed.org. Everything we do over there is free. Get our magazine. Subscribe. Get involved with us. We want your voice heard. Okay, my name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, and I thank you very much for listening, and thank my guests, Jay and Jill.